Financing again will be a big bottleneck, and we have always tried to work on various tracks to unbottle it. So again, we'll have to think from a deep tech, long gestation projects point of view, where are those institutional investors, where are those pockets of capital available, and continue to work. And I think we have done well. We'll continue to do well on our targets.
So I would say the gap is not just in capital, which is critical. It is also in robust market linkages, such that Indian startups can benefit not just from the smaller markets in India, which are rapidly growing, but also build for the world, which they're very capable of.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and philanthropists, of course, who are disruptors, yet not in your face. The disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. The values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for their vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, and of course, the little joys of life and work. Unusual Suspect streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. In this episode, we continue a series of insightful discussions we have been having with innovators and investors for the ENTICE 2.0 program powered by the Global Energy Alliance for People and Planet. Earlier on the show, we introduced you to some spirited entrepreneurs building original and localized energy solutions for India. In this episode, let's turn the discussion to the climate funding gap and how we can bridge it. We are joined by two investment partners of ENTICE 2.0 who bring with them in-depth knowledge of the climate finance sector in India. I have with me Seema Chaturvedi, founder and managing partner of Achieve Women Equity, AWE Funds, and Swapna Gupta, partner of Avana Capital, to the show. Seema has over 25 years of capital markets and financial management experience, having worked across top investment banking and financial advisory firms. As an entrepreneur and investor, she brings a unique perspective to the strategic planning and investment process. Seema is particularly passionate about women entrepreneurship. She founded and leads as chairwoman of Thai Global's marquee women's entrepreneurship program, which is called Project All India Roadshow for Women's Economic Empowerment Through Entrepreneurship. For this, she obtained funding from the U.S. Department of State for an unprecedented 6 consecutive rounds. This directly mentored 575 women from 106 Tier 2 and 3 cities in 20 states in India. Seema has also served on several boards and often visits reputed colleges as a guest lecturer and participates in several international conferences as a speaker. I also have Swapna Gupta, who is a partner at Avana Capital, where she leads investments into technology-led startups and helps catalyze climate solutions and sustainability and deliver exponential returns. Swapna has experience across investing, investment banking, and corporate finance, spanning sectors including supply chains, Industry 4.0, mobility and agri-tech. Prior to Avana, Swapna led India investments at Qualcomm Ventures. She was instrumental in the launch of Qualcomm Women Entrepreneurs India Network, a first of its kind networking, learning and mentoring program for deep tech, early stage female entrepreneurs in India. Her stellar work in the ecosystem has been recognized worldwide. She was also recently recognized by GCV as a top 50 emerging leader in the corporate venture community and was also one, only one from India on the list. Welcome to the show, Swapna and Seema. Delighted to have you here.
Thank you, Gaurav. This is such a pleasure and an honor to be with you on this show and be in this conversation with Swapna.
Thank you, Gaurav and Seema. Looking forward to this conversation.
Thanks so much. Swapna, first to you. In if you talk about India's progress in renewable energy over the last few years, I think it can best be described as remarkable. You know, we set a target of achieving renewable energy targets of achieving 50% of cumulative electric power capacity from non-fossil sources by 2030. We've already reached there. Now, the question, of course, is what next? Having reached this milestone, and what is it that we need to now prepare for? How would you define the next phase, for instance? How would you assess India's current readiness, both in terms of climate-aligned policy? Because there are a lot of layers. It's just not about policy. Many, many moving pieces will have to move together in complete alignment. It also includes, of course, financial debt, which remains, current as well as a long-term challenge of trying to organize uninterrupted flow of capital to enable companies to scale for long periods of time, remain resilient, and also trigger innovation-led infrastructure. What do you see as the most critical levers to deepen and diversify, our clean energy base on a very sustained basis, Swapna?
Thanks, Gaurav. I think all of us have been beyond surprised by what India has really achieved. As you said, remarkable. I think if you break it into two parts, if we go beyond utility scale, solar and wind, what really in terms of technology breakthroughs we can create, which can actually help us get faster, cheaper, better towards our energy security goals. And second is, other than technologies, what else do we need? If I think from energy security POV, the technologies that will really help us, some of the things and the kind of entrepreneurs we are meeting, some of them are focused towards grid modernization. How do you handle various renewables, demand side flexibility? How do you think about storage? How do you think about better decentralization in some cases? If I think about, the grid, you get the grid right, what else can you do? While you have had solar, wind and others for a while, newer fuels and newer technologies for many, many sectors are increasingly being worked on. Of course, one would love to get to a place where we all are working on SMRs and nuclear, but I think that's a long, long journey ahead. Hydrogen, I think still the price points don't work, but there are many more areas around energy and different sources of energy, including say thermal, bio, etc., which are being worked on. So that makes me very bullish from the generation POV. But I think, again, a lot of India, what is today, is a function of what National Solar Mission did, what actually we all have come together to build for a resilient India. We need to continue on the policy front progress, which means various initiatives like Green Hydrogen Mission, the energy storage guidelines definitely will be helpful. But for example, now we are talking about UEI, Unified Energy Interface, right? A lot of these will also be open source infrastructure, which India is great at. And all of this will help us get to those goals again, faster, cheaper, better. Financing again will be a big bottleneck and we have always tried to work on various tracks to unbottle it. So again, we'll have to think from a deep tech, long gestation projects point of view, where are those institutional investors, where are those pockets of capital available, and continue to work. And I think we have done well. We'll continue to do well on our targets.
Oh, yes, indeed. Absolutely. I think you said it right that we continue to do well on our targets, and it's a remarkable achievement to say the least. Seema, just to bring you in here, let's talk about deep tech innovation and deep tech innovation in sectors such as energy storage, which are very long duration, green hydrogen and grid digitization. We are just entering the high noon of these sectors so far as deep tech innovation is concerned. One of the key things that is required here, of course, is commitment of very long-term, of high-quality capital and of a commitment of a very high for a long-term basis. And this has to come, most of it has to come up front. And it is not just like, anymore. This is true of any infrastructure project, but more so here, it's different from, say, building an infrastructure project like an airport or a road project, because while they're also long gestation, in this case, it involves a great degree of technology, which is also evolving very, very rapidly. These are also solutions that can unlock superior returns. And from a ROI point of view, from someone who's committing that capital, the ROI seems to be very attractive over a long period of time. Only thing is that the long-term commitment has to be there. How should the ecosystem reimagine, particularly for early stage, ventures who are drawn up a long path to go down this road and to make room for this category of innovation? Because without capital, innovation will at best be suboptimal, isn't it?
Yes, Gaurav, absolutely. But I do want to address and touch upon and expand what Swapna just spoke about, if I may. And that also gives us a lens on how and where we see the opportunity as investors. India has done a phenomenal job, and I want to touch upon that. It has leapfrogged. What is positioning India as the perfect place to be investing in is a confluence of different factors. A lot of them are opportunities. A lot of them are must address challenges that have to be addressed. And that is really what's fostering the innovation that you just spoke of. And I just want to double click on that before we actually get into the capital aspect of your question. So we all understand that the infrastructure needs are massive. India, in our reckoning, literally and figuratively can have the key to the future of the planet. And we say this just because everybody recognizes the sheer size of the population, but also the growing aspirations and the consuming behaviors of individuals at a grassroots level can actually transform in the aggregate the future of the planet. So just simplistically, there is so much opportunity, but there's also so much risk if not addressed properly. And we are delighted that unlike some countries, India is actually embracing that leadership. And that gives me a lot of hope and optimism. And that's why capital is flowing into such sectors in India. Speaking of your now addressing your question about the nature of investments, look, you're right. These projects, depending, again, there is a interesting dichotomy in that sense in this particular sector, because there are those big infra capital intensive projects that people like us, at least us, our fund, would not really be able to invest in just because of the sheer size. So that's a whole different beast and needs to be addressed with the right sort of capital. What we are excited about is the innovation, especially the frugal innovation that is happening in the startup world. And we are seeing an ability for this startup ecosystem to address challenges that either ride on some of the innovations that big utilities or big discoms or big corporates or big industry have to embrace. It is not an option anymore. They have to embrace this. But being frugal and the quintessential nature of being a startup is to be able to find these innovations early and start them off in the right direction. So the issue, therefore, is how do we fund these? And again, it is in real time. The needle is being moved. We would like the needle to move faster. Capital is definitely an important bottleneck at the startup stage. The government has come up with some very interesting programs to address the shortfall in this capital base, and venture funds like us are pulling through. I would also emphasize the need for market access and programs like Entice, as an example, which are bringing different stakeholders together, are really very instrumental, because after the funding of a product, a prototype, or and a lot of climate solutions are very hardware oriented, building beyond the prototype phase requires you to have a paying customer. And creating linkages to market customers, markets that can adopt the solutions become very critical. So I would say it's not just, the gap is not just in capital, which is critical. It is also in robust market linkages such that Indian startups can benefit not just from the smaller markets in India, which are rapidly growing, but also build for the world, which they're very capable of.
Indeed, absolutely. You know, staying on the same thread, Swapna, you know, some of the most impactful technologies often require time to demonstrate returns. And by the time, you know, real tangible returns are seen or visible, it might take more than a decade or so on that too, on a conservative estimate. Do you think the ecosystem, the Indian capital, the venture funding ecosystem for this kind of ventures and this kind of, you know, utilities in the energy space that will take a long time to fructify, is mature enough to back such plays, or is there still a bias toward short-term results? Because at any point in time, after all, any venture funding is of course seen as an investment in an asset class. So there's always the risk of being prejudiced by short-termism in the decision-making so far as investment is concerned. So what needs to change, and how do we actually go about underwriting such early stage risk in deep tech energy innovation?
Thanks, Gaurav. I think I like the term short-termism and I'm going to use it. I think it's just our myopic lens that we often use as investors, and we need to sort of get rid of that. Because if you think about even Amazon, Flipkart, which are large e-commerce behemoths, took 10 to 15 years to build. So I don't know how you define deep tech versus not deep tech, right? I think it's important to think for us as investors is, yes, there will be some SaaS and some AI companies which can get there faster, but not all, especially when you're working on hard tech, which is out of labs, on some novel technologies, which is FOAK. These are longer cycles. Now, many capital providers do remain uncomfortable because underwriting is unproven. They don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty, adoption, timelines. Timelines can actually move by 12 to 24 months overnight, right? Depending on how your next batch looks. But I would say the tide is turning. I think this tide is turning specifically because it's driven by global scenarios. There is increasing need for us to have energy security, supply chain security, food security worldwide. We are all running against the clock, to be fair, right? Which means there is also an urgency which says technologies need to be built immediately and we have to get there faster and better. So we must evolve how we assess early stage risk. Now, in that, I think my conversations across various early stage investors, both small checks, slightly larger VC 5 to 10 checks, million checks, 10 to 50 million checks, has been that maybe it's time some of the early stage investors will have to rethink that we need to move from proof of revenue to proof of systems integration. Does that give you enough feedback to know that this will work and hence the capital stack starts aligning itself? Also, multi-cycle investment strategies have worked in certain parts of the world to back scale and not just pilot. So I think that is also going to evolve over time. And honestly, we have done it in defense and space, right? There are early proof points already. We have large local OEMs being built out of India. Who would have thought when Tesla was being built that you will have an Ather or Ola Electric from India, right? A lot of that has been increasingly proven that Indian entrepreneurs are ambitious, fearless, and can do it. In fact, at Avana, if I have to give you a sense of when we sort of started thinking about we have to build a very, very focused fund around technologies, deep technologies, which can help us solve for some of these problem statements, we said we'll keep $2 aside for every $1 we underwrite. Simply because, of course, we are deep in the sector, we see a fair share of very, very good entrepreneurs. We'll not invest in all of them, but whoever we will invest will be cherry picked. So probably we'll find many outliers. Second is value of death is very, very true in this market. So as I said, 12 to 24 months shift happens overnight. So you need to have that. For example, recently we had a company which had a small fire in its one of its facility and it had to really move its clock by 6 months, right? So all of this will continue to have. So we have to continue to underwrite for that risk. But continue to talk to later stack. So at Avana, we continue to talk to later stack players, tell them what's happening in India, how India is not only building for India, but for the world, which helps. And that reimagining stacks helps us accommodate for some of these technical risk, regulatory risk, deployment cycles risk. And I think this is where investors like us, platforms like Entice can help with building a good ecosystem know-how around that. Look, it's not short-term, it's long-term. And VC is not a short-term play, it's a long-term play.
Absolutely. Seema, I mean, as Swapna said, that VCs are clearly is a long-term play. It's never a short-term play. If you don't have the attitude towards long-term vision, then you'd rather stay away from it, invest in some other asset class and be somewhere else. You know, Swapna talked about the Entice program. Seema, if I may come to you, you know, the Entice program supports promising startups who have working prototypes, and these are clearly since the prototypes serve as a proof of concept, and some of them of course have some prior exposure to funding. At what stage do these entrepreneurs typically come to you, and where do they most often need support? What is the evidence and experience?
Thanks, Gaurav. I think in some part it is also a, alignment of where we are investing in. And I want to, again, before addressing your question, actually emphasize one thing about the VC world. The VC world is the VC world, and they're going to be driven by imperatives of their LPs. I do want to put in a plug for innovation in that, and I think Swapna was heading to that as well. For this climate tech sector, the nature of the VC needs to be a lot more refined because, yes, they are long gestational plays, but there is right now a confluence of factors making for a very robust business case, especially in startups, especially those that can scale and not just build for India, but for the globe. So startups, and I would put in a solid plug for especially the policymakers and the government to encourage blended capital, because that can really give us the firepower we need as VCs to be able to underwrite the perceived, emphasis on the word perceived, risk by private capital. Because unfortunately, all the capital, all the philanthropic capital, and even possibly the government capital cannot, or the sovereign wealth cannot solve for the crisis that we're facing. And we have to catalyze private capital, which means if we are working smart and stretching every rupee and every dollar by being able to pull in the effect of blended capital, we should. Because that is the stage that companies come to us. So I'll now answer your question about how, when do companies come to us. And as a platform, our funds invest in companies that are not in the 0 to 1 part of their journey, but the 1 to 100 part of their journey, because that's where our natural strengths exist. We have spent a career building and helping companies scale. And quite honestly, that is where we've seen a lot of innovation die out, because they don't have a viable path or somebody really holding their hand and saying, this is how you can scale, and this is how you can tweak your go-to-market strategy, and this is how you can tap into the networks, all of which we bring to the table because this is what we've done all our professional lives. So we are a little, even though our check sizes can be small. And you know, that's the other discovery, is that this whole nomenclature, the lines are so blurred between what's a seed and what's a pre-series. Yes, I guess bucket-wise, they still kind of exist. But we've seen some really capital-efficient models raise a smaller check and call it a later round versus a company that is massively capital-intensive, raise a much bigger check and still call it an earlier round. So putting aside the nomenclature hat, we are backing companies that are looking to scale because, and I want to emphasize, there's a lot of weeding out that happens in our ability to say, even if you have pilot revenues, we don't want necessarily to only go for commercial revenues, because that is the long journey you, all of us have been talking about. But there's a lot of weeding out in terms of the founding teams that come from the discipline of the founding teams appreciating that they are in the business to earn revenue. And I have been faulted for this and in the past years, but people do gain religion around this thinking every time the market hits a bump. And so we are looking at teams that are driven to not only understand the problem statement that they're solving for, develop a moat around it, but also really have signs of momentum. So we call these our 3 M's: the mission, the moat, and the momentum is what we are looking at investing in companies that we want to back in climate tech.
I like that, the mission, the 3 M's, the mission, the moat, and the momentum. And this is, that should be the motto. And also clearly revenue is, if the founders demonstrate the discipline and the relentless pursuit of trying to bring revenue on scale, I think venture funding will be closer than what is originally seen. You know, Swapna, if I may come to you, let's talk about decarbonization a bit. And it's now an industrial imperative, and there is no gainsaying the fact that it's not about when, it's not about why not now. So corporations, of course, you can see that spanning across corporations is triggered some kind of, it has now almost become an obsession to decarbonize and rightly so. And so corporations are increasingly engaging with deep tech solutions. But my question is more India specific. You know, If I were to ask you, what are the distinct advantages that Indian innovators bring to solving energy transition, how would you respond to that? How would you describe that? And what will it take for these solutions to actually scale globally?
Thanks, Gaurav. I think good framework. I will use the 3M framework also, Seema. But I think if I think about Indian innovators, right, I think the holy grail really is having a product market fit, and then it helps you scale. Indian entrepreneurs, I think, I once went to a VC office and I saw their password was faster, cheaper, better. And that has sort of stuck with me. We are uniquely positioned to lead cost innovation, frugality, and deployment at scale. That's who we are as Indian entrepreneurs, right? Domestic market is great and ripe for disruption, like you said. But as you said, there is also international offtake possible in some cases. But let's stick to domestic right now, especially in such a distributed and a climate vulnerable geography that we live in. We are in times where there's increasing focus around what we can do locally. And a lot of conversation has been about local sourcing. So we are a country which did moon launcher at half the cost of movies to Interstellar, right? So if we go by the same framework, we can do whatever is happening in the rest of the world. And we can have Indian innovators bring that to the decarbonization pathways. I'll come to the enterprise part of it, how they think about it. But if I think about these entrepreneurs, if they have to do India and they have to think about global scale, I think first of things which I see that these entrepreneurs need to, from the beginning, start thinking about deeper technical partnerships, right? If you're taking a technology out of India, if you're building for India, how do you think about certification, IP defense, global compliances, right? That is table stakes. We have to work with enterprises, and all of these, I think, entrepreneurs now know that there's no value in building in silos. You need to build alongside corporates, understand, be part of their sandbox, be part of their internal invention engines, if I could, and then work alongside to understand what really is happening. So find stronger offtake enterprise linkages across the board. I think the other piece which we have to think about is visibility across the markets. We, in fact, at Avana, we do a very, very focused effort as a fund that all of these, and like you rightly pointed out, short-term can be a challenge for a lot of funds, and they would like to liquidate faster. They would like to have a certain exit cycles, and which means these companies will continue to provide exit, yet continue to grow, yet continue to raise capital. So Indian innovators need to continue to think about where is that capital, where is that next capital pool, and how do you build those stacks to ensure that you are continuing to scale and grow, you're continuing to build for the markets. I think in all that context, if we, you ask us from Avana, and we are seeing this across our portfolio, now we are in our fund two, we are about 15 companies in, about three or four of them have raised follow-on fundings, continuing to scale. And the advantage that really is that we can, and I've seen this at my career at Qualcomm also, right? We as a country can build some of these technologies, scale, use India as a test bed and launch it across the world. So that's what is happening, and I will continue to happen. And I think, again, whatever you solve in India, you solve at a large scale. So if you can, there used to be a joke once upon a time that if you're a logistics company in India, you can solve for anywhere in the world, right? Because you have to figure out between the potholes and small roads and everything else, how to navigate this market. So I think that is our opportunity of understanding something so nuanced and taking it elsewhere is easily possible.
Absolutely. I like the logistical solutions analogy, rightly fit so, because if you can go from point A to point B and find an efficient solution at scale consistently, I think then you've solved all the problem, most of the problems. Otherwise, it would appear far, far easier than what it originally would have been presented. You know, Seema, and to both of you, the questions, the last question is about the Entice program. And what excites you most about this year's edition of Entice, and how will you be specifically looking for the solutions? And also, you know, how does Entice go beyond just funding to support the startups?
You know, Saurabh and I have chatted about this, and when I read about Entice being launched, super excited, and I called Saurabh right away and said, sign us up, because we've been looking for such an ecosystem builder program, and we will do what it takes. So we like the fact that they're really bringing together different stakeholders. And that is just the genesis of Entice, but the fact that they're policymakers, investors, startups, other ecosystem builders joining in, that is exciting, quite honestly. What is specifically about this year, Entice 2.0, is also the challenge statement on enhancing India's grid resilience, AI, smart data being tools to enhance that. And we see that as an effective place where we can play as investors at the VC scale, because again, it does feed into our requirement of making returns for our investors, and also doing it at scale and speed that can be supported by a VC model. So we are excited about the focus that they brought into this year's challenge. We are very excited with the tools that they're supported in the past. Last year's, I think, was battery storage energy storage at large. But to be able to use Entice as a platform to unlock India's flexibility for a sustainable energy future is what we are thrilled about. And the fact that Entice has taken charge and coalescing all of us is a true partnership model that needs to happen if we want to solve for this problem.
Swapna, what excites you the most about this year's Entice?
I think all that Seema said, plus maybe, I think we are all a bunch of like-minded folks, if I could. When I see the work Saurav and team are doing at Entice, what all of us, including Seema and a lot of other stakeholders in the ecosystem are doing is co-creating, co-building and sort of getting the ecosystem together. And I think with Entice, that is the most important part, is because capital is one big part of every equation. But as you think about building for India, you need to think about various things, from technology to sandboxing to capital stacks to regulatory policy, everything put together, right? At Entice, I think this program, which helps you with access to domain mentors, strategic partnerships, getting the ecosystem together as a catalytic bridge, which connects promising startups to aligned capital, various regulatory policy, administrative, academia, wherever the need be, operational ecosystems. I think that is the beauty of early stage co-creation with entrepreneurs. And I you mentioned Kuwain, I have done that at Qualcomm. We are doing that again at Avana as part of our grand challenge, which we run every year. And I see that similar value proposition and sort of similar values at Entice, which is basically, let's build the ecosystem, let's build early stage, and let's solve for a problem statement. In fact, let's not even participate in, let's shape that conversation, right? I think that's more important.
Absolutely. Indeed, very well said, both Seema and Swapna. Thank you so much for sharing a deep insights and perspective on a range of issues and taking the time out to drop by and have this conversation with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gaurav. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Gaurav. Pleasure was absolutely mine. Thank you so much for the time.